I think the barrier with technology and maybe education, training, and personal development is that ability to think strategically about what is that technology giving me back. The use of technology to tell us there's a problem is the first step. The second step is actually addressing the problem. And if we're not taking into consideration what that technology is telling us, along with everything else going on in the barn, to strategically figure out the root cause of the problem or what we should be doing about it, that I think is where experience and education play a much larger role.
The Swinit Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Mycotoxins were found in over 90% of feed sampled in 2025. Don't let mycotoxins impact your pig's health and performance. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/mycofix. Swine Veterinary Partners is comprised of four clinics across Canada that specialize in swine health, management, research, and development. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Good morning. I've with me today Matt Roeder from SwineTech out of Iowa City, Iowa. And I will have a discussion with him about the topic of human-centered automation in the Canadian pork industry. My name is Ruud Zijlstra, and it's a pleasure to be the host for you today for Swine It Canada. So, Matthew, good morning. Please, could you introduce who is SwineTech?
Hi, everybody. My name is Matthew Roeder. I'm the co-founder and CEO of SwineTech. And SwineTech is a software company based in Iowa City, Iowa. And we are focused on empowering pork producers to provide every pig with high-quality individualized care. And we accomplish this through a platform we developed called PigFlow, which uses human-centered automation to improve organization and communication in the sow farm, so that way people can be in the right place at the right time more often. Ultimately, this is improving efficiencies, employee engagement, as well as improve pig care. And so this has been a ton of fun working with producers, because we had the mindset that every sow farm is a unique version of itself, and that there was so much genetic and human potential already in the barns that the need for innovation was to figure out how do we more consistently do what we already know we should. And we have really found success in that, seeing 20 to 50% reductions in stillborn rates, seeing that a 2 to 4% stillborn rate is in no way unattainable. It's very attainable in the industry, as well as seeing 5 to 25% reductions in pre-wean mortality, along with other things. So the impact is very dependent on the producer, their situation, and what we need to do. But what we have really found in our data is that it is incredibly common that farms are below 30% compliant on a lot of the tasks that are recurring throughout the day that have a direct link to pig survivability and efficiency. So a lot of really cool things to talk about there, and excited to get into that today.
So then when you mentioned sow barn, so how prominent is SwineTech in the industry right now?
So SwineTech operates in the US, Canada, and Australia, with an eye on expanding to Mexico here in 2025. And we're working with about 425,000 sows and around 13 million pigs, and over a dozen of the top 40 producers here in the US. The use of PigFlow has been since 2020. That's when the product was released. And since then, we've been able to really maintain just about everybody who decided to give it a shot.
Is it like a certain locations within the US or Canada that you're more prominent?
Being based in Iowa, we kind of assumed that you'd see a really big presence in Iowa at the start. But the funny thing was that the early adopters to PigFlow were in Canada, Oklahoma, Ohio, and Tennessee. So we kind of have started all of this a little bit everywhere. And then as we've grown, it's really filled in the center. So we can be found in just about every pork producing state in the United States, as well as most provinces in Canada today.
Oh, interesting.
Swine Veterinary Partners comprises four well-established clinics across Canada Precision Veterinary Services, Premier SHP, Demeter Ontario, and Demeter Quebec.
How did other companies like Demeter, Premier SHP, and Precision Vet get involved with SwineTech?
Great question. So we were operating in Canada for a little while there with the Progressive Group and some smaller independents. And I was at the Banff Pork Show and was talking with Chris Grant. And he said, you need to meet Dr. Jen from Premier SHP over there in Manitoba. She's pretty cool. And I think she'll be really excited about what we're working on. And so he connected us and we started talking, and she was really excited. She saw how this could benefit her customers in the ability to provide more consistent care, but then also on the ability to get some insight into treatment utilization and whether or not those treatments are being successful. And so she introduced us to the broader group, because Premier is just one part of the Swine Vet Partners with Demeter and Precision and everybody else there. And so we met with the other partners, and they decided that this is something that they wanted to get on board with and bringing to producers in Canada. And so we officially kicked that off about a year ago and have since probably 10x'd the number of sows under management in Canada. So we've been growing really fast in Canada and expect that to be maintained here in 2025.
So when you then look at technologies such as the ones that you're providing, what are some of the reasons that such technologies are not being adopted more rapidly? Like what are some of the barriers that you see?
So we started SwineTech in 2015, and the goal was to figure out how to provide individualized care to pigs and reduce mortality. But we started with a completely different idea than pig flow. It was actually an idea called SmartGuard, which was focused on voice recognition for piglet crushing prevention. And that was an autonomous solution. It was quite effective at saving pigs, but there were other barriers: the labor needs, the robustness and durability, and the ability ultimately after you save a pig to keep it alive all the way until wean, when the producer actually realizes that ROI. And so we learned a lot talking to other technology companies and building one of our own on what was some of the bigger barriers. And one of them is just durability in the industry. When we buy equipment, we expect that to be around for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And when we buy that equipment, we expect that the service is going to be there throughout that duration. Now, producers are very keen on what the industry has been doing over the past 30 years. And a lot of equipment companies with technology, maybe ESF, have entered the market, but rarely has the support sustained itself for more than 10 years. And after 10 years, that's when you really need that support. And so, am I going to be able to either have the support or independently manage this myself was a big thing. The second was, is this going to add any labor whatsoever? Yes, there's an ROI in value, but in the labor environment that we have today, if this is going to add more work, it's an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. Third would be cost. What is the upfront cost and how proven is this? And with precision technologies, the upfront cost is often much higher and you're pretty committed to it. And so that hesitancy to jump in is much greater than what it is in software or other consumable products. And then lastly, how repeatable is this solution throughout the rest of my operations? We've seen it time and time again with precision technologies where they're able to get a trial farm, prove it works, but not prove to the producer in a way that gets them to believe that I could bring this to my other 20 sow farms and have my team use this just as effectively. And we'll get into why we don't have that confidence here probably later in this conversation.
Just as a follow-up, you mentioned labor, and also here in Canada, that is a critical issue. Is there any kind of level of education or understanding the technology that people should be aware of?
It's actually quite fascinating that the level of education hasn't really had much of an impact on the use of technology. And I think a lot of that has to do with how ingrained technology is in our lives from the moment somebody in their 20s or 30s has been born. It's been in there the whole way. And so sometimes it's just the sophistication of the technology that can be a barrier, but the use of it for younger generations, it's very easy. Older generations, it can be harder, especially for individuals that are still using flip phones. You're not ingrained into what does it mean to have the UI user experience of just a smartphone. I think the barrier with technology and maybe education, training, and personal development is that ability to think strategically about what is that technology giving me back. The use of technology to tell us there's a problem is the first step. The second step is actually addressing the problem. And if we're not taking into consideration what that technology is telling us, along with everything else going on in the barn, to strategically figure out the root cause of the problem or what we should be doing about it, that I think is where experience and education play a much larger role.
Okay. Yep. Interesting. So how does human-centered automation fit in? Like, what is it and what roles can it play?
So human-centered automation is actually a term that a friend of mine who owns a company in the south of the U.S. Coined for more manufacturing type work. They were seeing that there are a lot of jobs that occur that make it difficult for you to truly automate. You're still going to need a person to be there to help facilitate full execution. And that really resonated with me and my background in the swine industry and my background in healthcare, because we're seeing in environments where you're providing care to someone, it's hard to create a robot or a system that automatically says, oh, there's a sow that is sick. Well, I'm going to go walk over there, address it, and treat her. Because not only do we have to physically treat the animal, we probably also have to make a decision of what else is going on and do I want to keep her in the herd or what do I want to do about this? And so human-centered automation is the idea that we need to figure out better ways to innovate through people, empower them with information in such a way that they can be better decision makers and be in the right place at the right time more often, as opposed to saying we're going to get rid of the person entirely. Now, there are some jobs in the industry where we can do that. We're seeing a lot of success with robotic power washing and pig counting and some other things that are there. But what the consumer has told us in plenty of surveys is that they do not want a future where a human is not interacting with the animals. And even if we look to the care of ourselves or our parents or grandparents, if they're in a hospital or they're in a nursing home, how great would we feel about them not getting peer-to-peer interaction? It's a comfort thing. And so right or wrong, the consumer is going to not want the robotic feel of a finisher never having a person step in it and it's run with cameras. And so when we look at finishing, most jobs are executed by one person going through, walking the barn, feed, water, air, care. And that person, if they still have to be there, all of the cost that's going to go into the automation isn't necessarily going to offset the cost of labor. And so for it to be an efficient cost for the industry, we're going to have to innovate through that person walking in the barn as opposed to around them. And in a sow farm, there's no lack of variability in the type of jobs and things that happen. And so while with robotic power washing, we might take away part of a job, I don't see a world where we reduce staff considerably in the sow farm from what it is today. I mean, maybe we can get to a world where we're half as staffed. But even when we get into that situation, if we're not a massive sow farm, we're maybe a 3,000 and maybe even up to a 5,000, we still got to account for vacation. And if I'm running a 5,000 and I have people that need to take vacation, I still need enough people to breed sows, farrow litters, and do some of those basics. And so that human-centered automation is a call to action to think more about how we innovate through our people versus around them.
So basically, if I understood you correctly, one thing about human-centered automation is really allow a decision maker to make a better or faster decision based on better providing of provision of information.
Correct. A human today has to prioritize and they have to make real-time decisions. And if you can help with the prioritization, you can help with them having a better idea of where to go, we can just make people so much faster with technology.
Interesting. So how do you deploy human-centered automation and how does it work to help better pork production?
So there's a lot of ways I've seen it done. How we have deployed it is by taking live production data. and filtering it through predetermined SOPs. And in the industry, we have a pretty clear idea of what is driving our decision making for some things. Some things it's pretty wild, wild west. But for the things we do know, such as I want to check on a sow that is at risk every 15 minutes when she's farrowing, or not at risk every 30 minutes, or I want an at-risk sow to be marked at risk based on this prior performance, or if she has an abortion, just one, she's automatically a coal. We all have these parameters, these drivers, these levers in production. And a lot of times the manager is the bottleneck of that, even though we already know that decision. And so with human-centered automation and pig flow, we filter all that live data through those predetermined and custom SOPs and then present to the user in the farm the answer to that situation. I've got 20 sows farrowing. One needs to be checked in 15 minutes, one in seven, one in 18. I've got 18 sows coming into farrowing that are marked at risk. These are things that used to be done by going and looking at cards, inferring from that data what was going to happen, lacking consistency. And these are also things that we just never were able to evaluate. So once we empower that person with that information and do it in a way where it makes their life better, makes their day more efficient, we can start to see what are they doing. And is their action and behavior actually aligning with the SOP? If it is, awesome. If not, there's room for growth. And then you get to a place where you can start to make stronger strategic decisions. This quarter, we decided to run a 30-minute checkup on sows farrowing, and our stillborn rate was 5%, and we were 85% compliant. Well, 85% from everything we've seen is actually pretty good. And so in that situation, that farm might say, well, this quarter, let's change it to 25 minutes. Let's put a little bit more time into it. And if we can maintain 85% or higher, we can get a pretty good indication on what the impact was on stillborns by changing that particular lever. And so that's just one example within production, but they're all over the place. Little tweaks that we can start to make once we understand what we're doing. And it all starts by empowering that person to be in the right place at the right time and to be able to measure that.
So do you then see across the sow barns that you work with some kind of standardization of SOPs, or does each of them have their own ideas what this SOP should look like?
So it's a mixed bag.
Okay.
Depending on the producer, it's farm specific. And for some, it's system specific.
Okay.
Where that becomes dangerous, and we're starting to find some real challenges in the system with, is there's a lot of leading indicators to success. And most of our SOPs are leading indicators. And then we have our lagging indicators like stillborn rate, preween, sow mortality. When we have staffing issues, the industry is quite used to saying, all right, we're going to move our 8% preween mortality goal to a 10% preween mortality goal because we understand that you guys are going to have a hard time meeting that. What we don't change is the leading indicator. Mm-hmm. And so staff and management are in this constant battle of, well, I'm supposed to check on sows every 30 minutes or every 15 minutes, but now we have 70% staffing. We've already said stillborn rate can go up because we understand you're not staffed well, but we never actually changed the leading expectation within the SOP. And so now our staff are being judged on not doing the SOP well because they're poorly staffed, but we already acknowledged that that was going to be the case. And so we have these multiple stories going. So one thing that we've really come to find is that some of these SOPs that are leading indicators to success need to be dynamically adjusted, potentially through a week, a month, a year, a situation, to match the true expectation of farm throughput. Because if not, we're telling and expecting two very different things from farms. And so I think as precision technologies and human-centered automation becomes a bigger part of the day-to-day in operations, we're going to start becoming more comfortable with dynamic adjustments on a farm-to-farm basis with our SOPs, because we actually can see the drivers. And today we're pretty blind to that as an industry.
Could you please provide a couple of other use cases and some of the benefits relative to production outcomes?
Yeah, so we could stick with early pig care since we've been talking about it. And so some of the use cases around efficiency gain and quality of care for the pigs we'll just run through one workflow. We've got sows coming into farrowing. We already know based on her prior performance and the SOP that 18 of the 45 we need to load are at risk. And so the gestation team takes those 18 sows without having to do any historical analysis and loads them into a row and a half near one another, because we know they're all due on the same day because we're basing it off of the historical performance. When they get in there, the staff starts the sows that start to farrow. If they are at risk, they have a particular time associated with them. If they're not, they have their own time. And that employee can be reminded continually, am I late or are we on time? Or what's the situation that I need to be aware of? And that helps reinforce consistency of care. Now, when that sow finishes farrowing, you can build in workflows around split suckling if that's something you do. If I have an understanding of what is my teat capacity, my target count for the litter, and I know the SOP of how many pigs need to be present, doesn't have to be a finished farrowing, how many split suckling bouts, how long, you can build that in. So the moment that sow hits that criteria with that litter, it automatically kicks off a task. Hey, this litter needs to be split suckled. They need to be split suckled before they reach a day of age. And once they are split suckled, hey, you have 59 minutes until you need to rotate these pigs. And so what this ensures is that there is really no lack of transparency or visibility into, are we checking sows that are farrowing? Are we getting around to those pigs, getting them colostrum? Are we setting up litters for success after she has finished farrowing in our split suckling protocols? And are we not leaving pigs in totes? Just within that range, we rarely ever see a sow farm over 30% compliant in sow checkups or split suckling prior to bringing a little bit more light to the situation. And even from that, when we know that target count, we also understand when they want to be placing pigs within those first 24 hours. And so you can run an immediate calculation on your teat to piglet ratio to help them understand where are we at in regards to litters with too many pigs, where are gilts underloaded, and really help prioritize that fostering process. These are all things that we have no visibility as an industry to outside of the card, which rarely gets analyzed because a lot of these points are notes or items that don't get transcribed into a database. And so when we started all of this, we interviewed 32 of the top 40 producers. And each of the producers we interviewed said, there is no way for us today to verify execution. Unless we go in the farm and visibly look and kind of play detective. But even then, we realize that the behavior changes when we're there. And so we then realized that all of this just really came down to the people and execution. And so we met with over 200 individuals in farms and we asked them, what makes you stressed and frustrated? And they said, communication and organization. We want to understand what we need to do, when we need to do it, and are we doing a good job? And we just thought there was a lot of synergy there. And what's really happened here is that it has made life better for the person in the barn. It's made life better for the pig, and it's made it easier for management to understand what's actually happening and what strategies they can deploy to make improvements.
Yeah. So then when you provide information to the staff, is there a difference with how they look at screens relative to providing visual information or numerical information? Like what is a better approach?
And how they're doing some of the historical analysis?
Well, for example, are they looking at numbers on screens, like for example, 18 minutes, or is it like a red dot that gradually clicks down or so that they're visually understanding what is happening?
There is a numerical and a visual component. Yeah. So that way you see it's red, this is an alert, or it's orange, something's coming, or it's green, you're perfectly fine. And we were in a farm yesterday and it was hilarious because we were talking to one of the employees, getting some feedback, and the mortality rate was, I believe, at 7.9%. And as we were talking, it bounced to 8. Well, okay. 8 was the goal, or under 8. And so it went from green to red and she went, ah, my mortality just got above the goal. I'm going to go talk to this person, see what just happened. So having those colors, having that visually available at all times, it really does improve engagement and with the data and what it all means.
Yep. Interesting. So how can we use human-centered automation to empower businesses to better adopt and gain value from precision technologies such as you are providing?
So I think the first step in us helping the industry is to not think that one group can do it all. We have been working agnostically in the layer we are in. We are human-centered automation and execution, and that is our layer. And so what we do is we connect agnostically to records. And so we have direct integrations with MetaFarms and other groups that allow us to send the data we collect up to those companies for historical analysis. There's no need to rechange and rebuild the wheel. We have records, they work great, and they're building new things as well. And so we'll send that data to them. And on the precision tech side, it really comes down to that repeatability discussion we had at the very beginning. We collect data from precision technologies, and we filter that data through SOPs as well. So that way we can create a list that helps people see what are all my problems and how much time do I have until I need to resolve them. And then we can start to evaluate what percentage of the time are we compliant in our use of these technologies. And we'll use ESF, for example. I've got 50 sows that are off feed. Not every sow has been off feed for the same duration. And there may be other problems in the barn. So is resolving these sows off feed when I show up really the most important? Well, today we don't know. The manager is the bottleneck to that decision. But if I look and it says, well, your goal is you need to get a sow on feed within 24 hours, and it's 18 hours until the next sow needs to get back on feed because we've just identified that, well, that means I can focus on breeding. I can focus on my treatments. I can focus on my piglet cares. I don't need to treat it like a fire when I have plenty of time. And so bringing the visibility to the user on the severity of that problem with or that alert, we'll call it, because precision technologies rarely automate. They usually just inform about a problem. So if it's informing us of this problem, now we know the severity and how it stacks up against the rest of the day. But secondly, no precision technologies rarely know how well are our customers using this solution. And you end up with a finger pointing of, oh, the tech doesn't work. No, you're not using it right. Just like we have the management finger point, you guys aren't doing your job well. No, we are. You can't see what we're doing. And so we're resolving that by also documenting what percentage of the time are we resolving those issues on time. And this allows each layer of the tech stack to focus more on what they're good at. Records gets to focus even more on historical analysis and upper level management. We get to focus even more deeply on execution, and precision technologies get to focus even more deeply on identifying or even potentially automating more. And that interconnectedness is going to, I think, allow us to bring more value and consistency of use to the industry, which will show and prove out a more repeatable model that I think the industry has really been looking for. And why I say no one company I think should do it all or can do it all is there's so many different things to focus on, and producers aren't going to necessarily be able to pay enough to help one company focus on all of that and be staffed to focus on all of it. So if we all stay in our lane and we all work together, I think we can bring more change more quickly to the industry.
It's time for our famous three.
Yeah, thanks for an insightful discussion. Just as a final question, do you have any kind of resources that can be a book or a reference that you can point our listeners to relative to this topic?
One example of how all of us can be more efficient and is going to be a defining thing for the future and our abilities to be competitive in the workforce is the use of AI. And a great example of that's just ChatGPT.
Sure.
And there might be ChatGPT fatigue for some of you if you hear about it a lot. Some of you might have no idea what I'm talking about and have never used it. I will tell you that it is amazing how much faster you can make a decision based on how you use that and leverage it. And the future of success is going to be even more driven on our ability to ask great questions. And so I encourage people to use that resource and to practice asking great questions. Maybe it's as simple as, I'm really mad at someone and I'm writing an email, and I'm going to copy and paste my email into this tool and say, can you help me write this a little less aggressive? Things like that. It's just so helpful as a tool. But within the industry, for us, I think the greatest resource has always been the people. I can't tell you how many individuals have supported us along the way. And I know from the very beginning, Dr. Tom Stein and Randy Stacker were very helpful in guiding us on why is the industry where it's at today. Sometimes the best way in understanding how to solve a problem is understanding the history of the problem itself. And I can't recommend more to people to find mentors, find advisors, both young and old, because we can learn a lot from people coming out of college, and we can learn a lot from people who are headed into retirement.
Excellent. Thanks for your insights. This concludes another episode of the Swinehead Podcast Show in Canada, today with Matthew Ruda and with Root Sales as host. Thanks very much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.